All right, so morning show presented by St. Mary's Medical Group. Dave and Logan along with you. Second half kickoff, a little trombone shorty. Kind of fitting because we always play that when we bring in Chip Towers. And, you know, LSU winning the Natty and the game taking place in the... Do they still call it the Mercedes? Yeah, it's still the Mercedes-Benz Superdome.
Hey, we've been watching this live cam on Bourbon Street all morning. And let's just say, Dave, I think the people on the cam now are stumbling around looking for half empties.
Yeah, well,
looking for the half beer someone left on the curb.
Make sure there's no cigarette butts in it. It's all good to go.
Seeing very few LSU jerseys at this point. And the sun is coming up. So it's one of those, if you're still up, you're starting to feel a little bit bad.
Yep.
We've all been there.
The SEC dominating in that building the last 12 days with Georgia winning and now LSU.
Saints haven't even won there this year.
That's right. That's a good point. Georgia's won more games in that building this decade than the Saints have.
You're not wrong.
Although, I just fell into my own trap there of saying this decade.
Well, when you celebrate the decade next year, you'll be the only one, and we'll all pat your head and say,
"Heaven, no, bless, Evan,
bless your little hearts."
One of our coworkers, he agrees with me on that.
Okay.
All right, time to bring in our buddy Chip Towers from the AJC.com, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Hey, Chip, how are you today?
I'm fine, a little groggy, dragging a little bit this morning.
I know
these
Monday night championship games are a drag for everybody that has to get up early. Although Logan and I were talking in the previous hour, it's like it ain't changing, so it's just something you gotta deal with.
Yeah, I mean it's a bummer. It should be played on Saturday. I don't think there's any question, but the NFL is just not gonna. It's not gonna budge on that. You know, I wouldn't think there's no way you can get these guys to. To all agree on that. And, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I did sit up there and watch it. I haven't seen the TV numbers on it, but, you know, it was a great game for a good long time there. And, I'm not surprised. I mean, I was pretty impressed with Clemson early on, but, you know, Trevor Lawrence was obviously off, I thought. That LSU offense, just the numbers – the numbers that Joe Burrow put up this season is just funny. It's just stupid. I don't know that we'll see anything like this again. Maybe we will. Maybe it's just the way that where it's headed. And you know, there'll be more Joe Burrows come down the pike, and Jamar Chases and Justin Jeffersons, et cetera, et cetera. But it was pretty incredible to behold. And you know, Ed Orgeron and LSU in that building, it seemed predestined to me almost. But incredible. I heard you talking about Orgeron and his compensation and all that. He's not one of the highest paid in the SEC right now, but he will be real soon. The LSU has shown in the past with Les Miles and Nick Saban, they definitely do a market adjustment if you win a championship for that program. So I imagine he'll pop right up there to the top, right in between, somewhere in there between Saban and Dabo and those guys.
Yeah, it's funny how Dabo is number one. This may be off a couple of cents, but he's number one at annual compensation of $9.3 million. And by the way, I don't know if you know this or not, that goes a long way in Clemson. And then you got Saban at $8.8 million and Harbaugh at $7.5 million. And then as Logan was mentioning, you go all the way down to 30th in the country for Coach O right now at $4 million, although he got a $500,000 bonus for winning that game last night. But, yeah, his numbers will certainly change after what LSU did. But it's funny, too, isn't it, that you know, they've got this – all of a sudden, Joe Burrow, he had a good year last year, you know, fine year. But, I mean, all of a sudden, just exploded, just absolutely exploded. And I was going to ask you, do you think that gives fans for other teams a false sense of, oh, all we got to do is get, a guru whiz kid coach and a new offensive philosophy, and our quarterback can throw 60 touchdown passes? Mm-hmm. Do you? I mean,
yeah, no, I do. I agree with you, Dave. I know where you're going there, and I do agree that it's a look. This is a perfect storm situation. You talk about those bonuses. You know who didn't get enough? Joe Brady.
Yeah.
Joe Brady got a $60,000 bonus, and he makes $400,000 a year, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah.
If my numbers are right. So you know, he doesn't even clear a half a mil on this this whole operation. Now, again, there will be a market adjustment in his future. Actually, I heard him. I can't remember if it was the SEC Network or somewhere else, but talking with pretty big confidence that he's going to remain at LSU, though you know the suitors are lined up out the door to get him. But, I think it does sort of give a false sense because, look, that was a perfect storm. We hear it right here. You guys are hearing it. I hear it. About Georgia, we got to get some new coordinator. We got to bring a new coordinator in here. We got to spread it out, you know, and so we can throw 60 TDs too. It's not that simple. It's not. And look, you're going to see, a metamorphosis in Georgia's offense.
Mm-hmm.
You've actually been seeing it to some extent. It's hard to tell, but you remember when Georgia used to have a fullback? I mean, that wasn't that long ago. That was about the time that Kirby arrived, and there is no longer a fullback in Georgia's offensive operation. It's zone read now. Zone read play action, and the zone read play action is going to have a lot more teeth to it, you know, when you put Jamie Newman in it next year. So Georgia already had RPOs. I mean, just anecdotally talking to Kirby about practice on a day-to-day basis, and, you know, they're talking about that this particular period they spent working on RPOs. I mean, you know, it's just to what extent do you dive into that? And a lot of that has to do with personnel. But that's where LSU differentiates itself. Nobody else has that personnel. And that's what made them kind of a generational team, in my opinion, with those wide receivers, Justin Jefferson and, you know, the Clyde Edwards-Helaire situation. I mean, it was just kind of a perfect storm for LSU, and they were able to cash in on it.
Well, you kind of segued exactly where I wanted to go. So I'm gathering what you're saying. We should not expect 60 touchdown passes from Jamie Newman, but I know you've watched a lot of Wake Forest football in the last 48 or 72 hours. What can we expect from Jamie Newman next year?
Well, you know, a lot of people have done it already, but my what is Georgia getting in Jamie mm-hmm. Newman's story will be running later today. And, who knows, really? I mean, you know, he's a typical Wake Forest player from the standpoint of, that's what I call a developmental program. Certain programs, they're not going to get the five stars, and they're usually not going to get the four stars. So you look for players that you can develop, and that's what Jamie Newman was at Wake Forest. He was a not completely refined quarterback. He's a big, huge guy, 6'4", 230 pounds, but very mobile, very quick, and everybody I talk to talks about his deep ball arm, his deep ball accuracy being very, very special. Well, that should be a great fit for Georgia. You know, I mean, that's what Georgia does. It, at the end of the day, it's still play action. You know, right? Really, it's play action. I'm going to either give it, keep it, or throw it. And I think this guy has the potential to do a great job. Now, what we don't know, and I spent a lot of time talking to Anthony Timmons, Newman's high school coach, about what he knew about what Georgia was going to do. Is this a situation where Georgia is going to completely retool to fit Jamie Newman, or Jamie Newman is going to be retooled to fit Georgia, right? Well, the truth is probably in between. I mean, Timmons doesn't know completely. We've already gotten to that point where, Newman's at Georgia now. He's embedded. It's not going to be a whole lot of conversation, but I imagine he already has his Georgia iPad with the playbook on it, and those skull sessions are starting fairly quickly with James Coley and the offensive brain trust to how are we going to look. So I think it's going to be, you know, I don't think they're going to become LSU by any stretch of the imagination, but I think you will see them become certainly a more spread, hurry-up, RPO version of the Georgia we already know.
Do you know how all that went down? And how do you know how it goes down when you're getting somebody, a grad transfer? Does, like, you know, obviously Georgia's had to kind of, you know, with roster management, have in place, you know, if Fromm's not coming back, you know, what are we going to do? But do you know how all that goes down, like when you start identifying certain players, or do they, you know, they come after you? Does the grad guy go in the transfer portal so that you can make contact with them? It's a question I get asked a lot, and I don't really know the answer to that.
Well, you know, Jamie Newman's intentions to move as a graduate transfer were known, if I'm not mistaken, before Georgia played in the Sugar Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And so my understanding is everything really got fast-tracked, you know, after the new year, and in particular after Jake Fromm makes his announcement. And, of course, there wasn't much time in between those two. In fact, it's interesting to note, and I'm trying to get a little bit more details on it, but it sounds like that Jake Fromm actually talked to Jamie Newman in advance of this whole decision and encouraged him, you know, to go to Georgia. And, you know, what's that? You know, what's, I mean, Jamie Newman, what I haven't been able to get a clear picture on is exactly how deep into conversations with what other programs was Newman before Georgia became obvious. You know, and for a lot of reasons, they don't want to divulge that information because there may be somewhere where a senior quarterback is, and they were thinking that this guy would be an upgrade, but then you don't get him, so your other guy's there. You know, so I can understand the kind of the secrecy around that. But here's the bottom line, you know, and it makes sense. Once Georgia came open, there was no competing with that. I mean, you're talking about, look, we saw the AP poll this morning. You know, Georgia opened last season at 3. They finished the season at 4. It's pretty incredible, really, when you think about it, when you get, you know, you get curb stomped in the SEC championship game and you lose at home to South Carolina, and you only drop one spot, you know, from the preseason poll to the postseason poll. But, you know, that's where Georgia is right now, and there was no comparison for anywhere. I mean, I don't know what Oklahoma's situation is, whether he was in touch with them, and but there's a handful, you know, Florida, I mean, whatever, that are right there on the precipice. But it was the way Timmons put it to me was that, you know, it was just a perfect marriage. You know, they knew it right away. Academically, too. I mean, this kid was at Wake Forest and graduated in 3 years, you know. So, you know, he's got some intelligence as well. So all that's got to fit. And again, we mentioned perfect storm earlier, but it was a kind of a perfect storm in that situation. Now, it's going to be, you know, Georgia does have some other quarterbacks already on campus. You know, I don't know if jobs were promised or whatever. But, you know, you're not going to come somewhere as a graduate transfer and sit. So, you know, I mean, he's your guy. And then, you know, Carson Beck and you know, and all those other guys, Stetson Bennett, you know, they're going to get ready. I'm sure Stetson Bennett's going to, you know, do his darndest to become a part of the conversation. And he's certainly going to be ready in a backup role. But it looks like this is Jamie Newman's, you know, it's his cart that you're hitching your horse to. And let's go see what happens.
Talking with Chip Towers from the AJC, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Chip, I'm trying to think what all has happened since we talked to you last. We've been talking a lot about Fromm being gone. There's less pinky than there used to be in Athens with the whole Cade Mays. I was trying to say Ben Cleveland. It was not Ben Cleveland. It was Cade Mays. What do we take from all of that? Where does Georgia stand in terms of, I guess, lawsuits, and what is it going to do with this, what's going to be a massively rebuilt offensive line going into 2020?
Yeah, and Tom Maher's getting into a pissing contest with Georgia. I mean, the day Jake Fromm announces he's going pro or you know, not coming back, and that's not even the biggest story of the day. I mean, it's incredible.
No.
It's incredible.
It is incredible. I think the Cade Mays situation, I mean, that's really the really sad. I mean, in my opinion, I mean, you know, I get it. You know, this is kind of the age of free agency and everything else. But you know, Cade Mays was or maybe still is going to have to sit out when you go from SEC program to SEC program. The conference trumps on these type of situations, and you know, clearly Tennessee and Tom Mars are angling for a special circumstance. It certainly is a special circumstance. I can't argue with that. But, you know, it's such a joke when you think about, I mean, you know, when Cade Mays signed at Georgia, the whole losing the pinky thing was a joke, you know, was a funny anecdote that went along with the story of Cade Mays signing it. You know, Cade Mays liked Georgia so much, his father lost his pinky and he still came here anyway. And, you know, so it's just lawyering, it's just legalese, but it's unfortunate. Now, here's what you got to think about it. You know, it's about to get nasty between Georgia and Tennessee. I mean, it's getting nasty between Georgia and everybody. You know, Georgia's been kicking some butt, and this is what happens when you're continually beating up on somebody in recruiting. They are going to go to all means to upset that apple cart. They're not going to sit there and, you know, look, this is a Jeremy Pruitt thing. I don't know who talked to whom when, but you know, Cade Mays goes from being, you know, happy go lucky, Mr. Versatility on Georgia's line to where he is now. And I think I might have talked to you guys last week. I thought, you know, I said, I understood maybe the Sam Pittman factor here. Because he loves Sam Pittman. You know, Sam Pittman was the reason that Cade Mays, you know, pops up out of Knoxville, Tennessee, comes to Georgia. No question about it. He leaves, he goes to Arkansas, okay. You know, you can understand he loves his coach. He wants to play for his coach. But he's not going to Arkansas. He's going to Tennessee, where his brother and his father, you know, have going to play and have played. And it's just a mess. This is the competition level in this league. It is just through the roof right now. You know, teams and programs aren't going to sit around idly and just let Georgia own the East as they have the last few years. I don't think as far as now getting back to your original, question, you know, Georgia has recruited for this moment. I mean, they knew. Yeah, they had to know. I mean, you knew Andrew Thomas wasn't going to play another year. Isaiah Wilson was a little bit of a surprise, I think, and you know Solomon Kinley is too. And you certainly didn't see Cade Mace coming. But man, it doesn't take very long to just look at Georgia's depth chart. Rather, okay, well that guy, we're going to see him this year, and that guy, we're going to see him. And you know, all of these guys came highly recommended to the University of Georgia. They're just going to be pressed into action pretty quick. And I think it's possible for Georgia to stay right where they are, especially with that defense being what it is. But I do think Jake Fromm leaving and all those other linemen leaving, that there's no question that impacts your college football playoff probabilities. But those are still pretty high. Looking at Vegas, you know, this morning, and yesterday, you know, I think 8-1 odds or so and so, tied with LSU, maybe the fourth or fifth team in the country in terms of the odds of making it to the college football playoff. So, you know, here they are, number four. They'll start at least there next season, and that means you got a real shot.
Yeah, starting today, Chip, we'll see a lot of those way too early top 25s, and I'm all about those. I think college football is and should be a 365-day adventure, but there's a lot of fan bases around the SEC East in particular. Tennessee right at the top, Florida right at the top. They see the news about Jake Fromm and the offensive line getting rebuilt, all the offenses, you know, basically starting from scratch, and they're getting pretty good feelings that, hey, Georgia might be done for a little while here. I don't see that as the case, and would you agree that Georgia's window is far from closing, that it's just going to be a different look this coming season?
Well, yeah, you're right. That's the narrative. I mean, if you can picture, Dan Mullen and Jeremy Pruitt, mm-hmm. they're rubbing their hands together going, ah, ha, ha, ha. You know, uh-huh. It's, you know, look, this is the phenomenon of what has been Alabama. It's hard to stay up at the top because there's so many factors. You got guys turning pro early when you've recruited at a really high level. You got coaches taking over jobs when they do a good job. It's hard to keep, you know, it's hard to keep the band together, right? And and that's certainly the situation that Kirby has dealt with really the past couple of years now. But yeah, they, you know, all those you know, number six, number three, number two, and number one recruiting classes, most of those guys are still around, you know, and they're all matriculating, and it's not a static situation. I think there's no better example than Joe Burrow. You know, the guy you have today is not necessarily the guy you have next year. What about Aziz Ojulari? Aziz Ojulari, you know, he was already in Georgia at the beginning of the 2018 season, but you didn't realize how good he was till the end of the 2018 season when he popped out in the first Sugar Bowl that Georgia played. It's not a static situation, and so when you've got these, you know, elite recruits, they're being trained up. Georgia's going to have a bad A defense next year, and so you may not need 40 points a game to be able to win games. You might be able to do it with 30 points a game, but you know, I guarantee you they're not going to stop trying, and I think they're going to be, it's not going to be a reload situation, I think, like we saw last year and maybe to some extent the year before that. But I think it's going to be a little bit more of a rebuild. But, I mean, I think you'd say the same thing about LSU coming out of last season, right?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. By the way, before we let you go, what are you hearing or what you can say on the search for that assistant coach that Georgia has to replace Coach Fountain with?
You know, absolutely nothing. I got to be honest with you. I haven't really been, you know, the thing about, I mean, I assume that, you know, they're going to replace a special teams coach with a special teams coach. I mean, look, you can, there's nothing that says you got to have it. It has to be configured that way. You can do it any way you want to do it. So I don't know what Kirby's thinking on that. He really disappears at this time of year. I'm not sure when we'll next get an audience with him. And I haven't really been burning up the phone. Like you said, I mean, you know, last week's news cycle.
Well, yeah, I know. So many things going on.
Yeah, there's so many things going on. You know, I'm reading lawsuits, you know. I'm reading fine print.
You got a magnifying glass.
I'm talking to agents. Yeah. Jake, you know, still trying to get our arms around that. I mean, I thought it was kind of interesting, didn't you guys, that, you know, here's Jake Fromm. Been everything for your program the last 3 years, leaves to turn pro, you know, we get a little Twitter statement. We don't hear anything from Kirby. We don't hear anything from the University of Georgia. He's just gone.
Yeah.
I thought that was a little odd. Now, I've done some digging around since then, and you know, if I'm reading it right, that's kind of the way Jake wanted it. He is a guy that, you know, doesn't necessarily crave the spotlight, not that type of spotlight. There's just kind of a lot of odd thing. There's a lot of things still trying to get, you know, our feet planted, you know, firmly on the ground. And then you got the basketball situation going, which is pretty interesting. Last week had a potential to be a great week for the Hoop Dogs. It ended up falling short of that, but the season continues on that, and we need to keep a close eye on Tom Crean and Ant-Man and what those guys, they got a really, really big couple of weeks coming up. They need to get their footing back on solid ground after last week. So lots to follow, but that's okay. That's why we love Georgia, isn't it? We love to talk about it, love to follow it. It's never boring, guys. It's never boring around here. There's always something to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, even Herschel not being number one grinds my gears today, but, you know.
Oh, my. You know, I haven't even weighed in on that. What, you know, kind of moving from Dog Nation to back to the AJC, I don't really have that columnist platform anymore. Yeah. But I saw D'Angler, man. It took him about 30 seconds to get a tweet up, you know, and I agree with him. It's like,
yeah,
Jim Brown, man, I man, you don't have a bigger. I actually grew up It just shows you how old I was. But, I mean, I wasn't really a Jim Brown fan. I didn't see him play. But, I mean, I knew Jim Brown. But his was an NFL thing.
Yeah,
he
exactly.
He didn't really do that much in college. I mean, with Herschel, there is no, you know, you can make some argument with Bo Jackson, but you're not going to win that argument in terms of, and I, you know, there's a lot of other players, you know, Earl Campbell, maybe some others you could make the argument about, but not Jim Brown. That's an NFL, you know, legend, not a college legend. There is no peer for Herschel Walker, in my opinion. Well, I agree with Jeff Danzer on that.
Oh, yeah. We were having a good not safe for work text exchange going on last night. But, you know, one of my buddies, he says, hey, ESPN's full of Syracuse grads, so that's why that was. I don't know. I thought that was actually kind of funny. So I don't know.
It used to rear its head way worse than it does now, you know, kind of the Northeast effect of ESPN. You know, now the SEC has their claws into them pretty good.
Yeah.
But you're right. That was definitely the Syracuse factor, I think.
Hey, Chip, always great talking to you, my friend. Thank you very much, and we'll catch you again next week.
Catch you next week.
Thanks,
see y'all.
Chip Towers from the AJC.com.